know, the gospel is constantly trending toward greater cohesiveness with greater diversity, you know. And so if we want to ask, is it beneficial? Maybe we should ask, well, does your engagement with social media or with technology lead toward greater inclusion of other people, more unconditional love and acceptance of them?
Welcome, everyone, to the Faith Recovery Podcast, where we are seeking to recover faith.
And especially you. You out there. You're especially welcome. You know who you are.
We're seeking to recover faith by recovering the faith. It's a podcast about the gospel. Yeah. Really, it's like the multidimensional gospel and all the different ways we can understand it and all the different ways it applies in life. And our series is about that. Our series is called The Voice of the Shepherd.
Yeah.
We're looking to understand how the shepherd Jesus speaks to us in daily life, the message of the gospel, and applies it to the facets of life.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm Kent.
I'm Nathan.
Today we're talking about technology and all of its forms in our life and how to use it, how to relate to it, how to make use of it in a gospel way.
I see you there with a tablet, Kent.
Yeah, I got a tablet. We're recording on technology.
Ugh.
I got a phone over here.
Podcasts.
Yeah, I got a computer over there in the bag.
Yeah, the gospel denounces podcasts. Not really. We won't go there. No. I don't know, man. I'm in a weird mood. I told you this. Okay. Yeah. So, Kent, what questions do you have about all this?
Well, my friends and I mean, people I'm just in relationship with, it's just a perennial question. How do I get off my phone?
Yeah.
How do I get off social media? How do I become less distracted by these devices, by this technology I'm using? I don't really, you know, nobody in my circles is interested in becoming and going off the grid and becoming a Luddite, a Luddite, right? Isn't that someone who rejects technology?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of interest in that. We want to use technology, but we don't want to be used by it. We don't want to be enslaved to it.
Yeah. We don't want to be the Unabomber, right? Uh-huh. He's not a good example. Don't follow him off the cliff. And yet, you know, he had a point. If you read much about the guy, Ted Kaczynski, he died 2023, I think. And I don't know if you've ever, did you ever see that special?
I saw it, something like a Netflix documentary about him. Sure, he had a message about how we're becoming slaves to the machine.
Yeah, well, and he's a brilliant guy, you know. I mean, you just can't really discount somebody that gets into Harvard at 16, you know, basic on track to get a doctorate in mathematics and, you know, maybe as much a victim as he was a perpetrator, if you've seen the show. But the things that he understood about technology and where it was going, I think it should be heeded. And some of the stuff he said is similar to what we've talked about in terms of what the gospel saves us from. And I would say that for him, the guy had some good thoughts on what the problem was. He just didn't have a solution. And certainly the approach he took was lamentable, grievous. There have been a lot of people who pointed out the problem.
He sent packages to blow people up.
Right.
Yeah, he was trying to blow up the machine. Kill people, kill the machine.
Right. Yeah. And I mentioned before, Karl Marx had some great insight on what the problem is. Just didn't have a good solution. And maybe we can find people throughout history who've really been good at pointing out what the problem is.
Yeah. They see injustices. They see humans being used.
Right.
But they don't have the gospel
as
their solution.
Well, and what Kaczynski saw was the loss of individual identity, the loss of the human soul, in a way, to a corporate mind that was facilitated by technology. Mm-hmm. That people didn't really know who they were because they were engineered to just conform. And so, you know, he'd make a case that you're out in the middle of nowhere and you and the light's red at an intersection and you stop, even though, you know, nobody's coming from either direction. You just sit mm-hmm. there for, you know, a couple of minutes, however long, mm-hmm. because the light's red, mm-hmm. Without actually using your reason. And so you've got a technological interface, the red light, mm-hmm. right? You've got a degree of conditioning, whatever you learn to get your driver's license, et cetera. And in that moment, you've given up reason, individual choice, your personhood, and just by default, you sit at the light, mm-hmm. even though...
And you talk about this in your book, right? This is like the social forces of conformity and authority at work here, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying we should run red lights and stuff like that. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but...
but you should recognize these are forces at work in the world.
Right.
Controlling your behavior if you let them.
Right.
And sometimes you... And it'd be healthier to voluntarily choose mm-hmm. to... obey the red light rather than blindly choose.
Right, right. If you could find a good reason to sit at the red light other than the light's red.
Uh-huh.
You know? I think about that that scene in the classic movie, The Christmas Story, when the kid sticks his tongue in the pole and he's frozen to the pole and the bell rings and Ralphie, you know, he feels compelled to go in. Mm-hmm. And Flick is like... help, help, you know, he's stuck.
But the bell's ringing.
The bell rang. It's like that trumps everything, uh-huh. you know, the bell rang. And so again, you know, you have a technological interface, the sound of a bell, uh-huh. right? This kid is trained. He's, you know, what's he in third, fourth grade, probably fourth grade by the time the movie, you know, and the movie's set. So he's had a few years to be taught that when the bell rings, you go in, mm-hmm. you know, and you get the like Skinnerian conditioning. And really,
B.F. Skinner.
Yeah, B.F. Skinner and his work in classical conditioning and you know, these kinds of operational training and people can begin to be fatalistic, deterministic, really out of the Skinnerian approach. There was this thought that we really are not individuals with a soul. We are the sum total of our conditioning. Mm. And I don't know if we've ever fully gotten past that. You know, we've mentioned before that Sam Harris is an atheist determinist, which to me, it just seems like, you know, if there's one good thing about being an atheist, it's that you get to call your own shots.
He's like, no, that's not how it is. We're determined by the forces, by forces outside of our control.
Right.
Well, now, are you saying, are you getting to a point or is it implied in what you're saying that these are social forces with or without technology, but technology harnesses these social forces mm-hmm. and accelerates them, makes them worse?
Right, right. So I guess if we're asking this morning, what does the gospel say about technology? Mm-hmm. One thing it says is that, you know, we're called to be free and that technology, that we run the risk when we use it of relinquishing our freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Paul has a very healthy approach to things that are potentially, that are, that we're free to do perhaps, or, you know, and there's been this refrain. Oh, so freedom, right? What is freedom? It's a double-edged sword, right? So freedom resists this external compulsion, whether through coercive forces or conforming forces like the red light, right? And the red light, we're somewhat, maybe that's it's a conditioned response, it's conforming response, but it's also the product of potential coercive forces, right? Mm-hmm. You might get a ticket or pay some sort of a price, right? And so we have to be aware and critical of the forces that are working on us. And that, I think that was Kaczynski's concern, was that people are unaware of these things, you know, and he, as somebody who had been through this MK Ultra program and this very intensive, you know, tearing down of his individual identity, was maybe acutely aware of mm-hmm. the forces at work mm-hmm. to do that to a human psyche. Mm-hmm. And he was probably left without the resources to resist those influences and so fled into this cabin in the woods. But we, and with the gospel, we have the resources to resist, right? We're not dependent on acceptance of somebody else or their approval for our well-being. Okay, so we're free of that. But we can fall into those things if we're not aware. And so that's what I think Paul is encouraging, you know, throughout the throughout his letters. He encourages people, hey, remain free, even when that freedom is potentially dangerous to the individual or the society. Paul does not retreat to a legalist approach. Okay. And we've mentioned this before. And so where Paul affirms in 1 Corinthians 6, and this is in the context of sexual immorality. Okay, so here you have these people and who recreationally, you know, instead of going bowling, you would just have an orgy at the pagan temple, right? I don't know if they had leagues. I don't know. You know, but that's what you do for fun, right? You don't, you know, they didn't have a dance hall, right? And because, you know, dancing was wrong, apparently. And anyway, no. But, and so it's so commonplace that there are people who are converted to Christ who were wanting to follow the God of the Jews. And they're aware that the Jews are not participating in that. But they're like, hey, this is cool. We can come in as Gentiles. And as Gentiles, what we like to do on Saturday night is go down and, you know, visit the prostitutes. Okay. So, and they, I think, had really taken this libertine approach toward sexual ethics. Now, Paul will confirm that. Well, you know, they'll say, hey, I think that they had projected the gospel, and this mentality is that, you know, having recreational sex is like eating a meal. You have a need and you fulfill it. We've spoken about this. But he says, I have the right to do anything. And I'm not going to read the NIV this time because it's just, it makes me so mad there where they, you know, I'm not against functional equivalence approach to translation, but I don't like when people put in, write in the text without any kind of italics, you know, the you say. Okay, so he says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. That's, you don't have to put that in quotes. I mean, even the ESV puts that in quotes as though that's what the Corinthians were saying. All things are lawful for me.
Your point is that that's Paul's principle.
It was.
That comes out of the gospel. You're saying this is our the series that we're in, the voice of the shepherd. What are the principles from the gospel for life?
Right.
And you're saying this is one of Paul's principles for life that comes out of the gospel. All things are lawful now.
Right.
I'm free.
Right. And I think the emphasis is on the for me, which is why it's important to put it back in Paul's mouth.
All things are lawful for me.
Right. Not for everybody. I don't think Paul would say all things are lawful for everyone. Okay. I think he would say all things are lawful for me as a redeemed person, as someone in whom the Holy Spirit dwells.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Oh, yeah. Because somewhere else he says against such things there is no law.
Right,
you know, because
Galatians 5,
fruit of the Spirit. Follow the fruit of the Spirit, and you're not under law. There's no law against any of those things. Exactly. Law is of no concern to you.
Exactly.
Because you're following the Spirit, and you don't need law.
Yeah, and maybe just as pointedly in 1 Timothy 1, he says, law was not made for a righteous person, but for an unrighteous person. So Paul is saying, look, there is this mechanism to bring someone to practical righteousness that is faith. And so the person who lives by faith and is guided by the Holy Spirit is not under law. And so they can say, and I think that's why it's important to get those freaking quotations off the sides of that. And again, recent translations stick that on there. It's just a massive pet peeve for me because I think it's critical that we put it back in Paul's mouth that this affirmation that I am free. I live in a law-free zone, and so do you if you are a follower of Christ. That doesn't mean that everybody across the board should be out from under law. We wouldn't want that.
Right. Some people are ungodly and therefore need law. Society is ungodly and therefore needs law.
Right.
And Christians affirm that.
Right, which is why we submit to the laws willingly as free people because we appreciate the fact that the policemen keep the unredeemed people from doing everything they want to do, you know, and we aren't going to penalize them or be some subversive influence to undermine what they're doing, to make their job harder, because they're keeping us safe. They're keeping social order for the sake of really us as we try to follow the gospel. And Paul experienced that. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about in Ephesus when really you had a lawless gathering of people who, you know, that you had this silversmith, right, Demetrius, and he's raising up this horde of people. And they're, you know, they're shouting, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians," and they're ready to just, you know, tear Paul limb from limb. Mm-hmm. He's rescued by the sanity of the proconsul, who's like, "What is this?" You know, time and again, the Jews would hound and harass Paul. They'd gather as a mob. They'd try to tear him to pieces, and they Roman soldiers or the local authorities would step in and say, "What are you doing? You know, mm-hmm. this can't be allowed." Mm-hmm. Paul understood that. He needed somebody to enforce the laws, okay? Mm-hmm. But as an individual, you and I, all of us, need to be able to say, all things are lawful for me. Mm-hmm. If we can't say that, we're not following the Pauline version of the gospel. This is why it's just critical that we keep that back in Paul's mouth, because Paul is affirming his freedom even as he's condemning immorality in the church.
Okay, and that means that Jesus died on the cross to, among other things, set aside the law mm-hmm. as my guide,
right.
And I'm no longer under law. Therefore, for that reason, all things are lawful for me. I'm no longer right. under law, because law could never accomplish righteousness. It could never right. produce righteousness. So God, and in fact, it just produced condemnation.
Right.
So God had to remove the law. Okay, so that's kind of background theology mm-hmm. for why all things are lawful for me.
Right. And maybe this is 50% of the gospel's instruction regarding technology.
Okay.
Okay. Because anytime somebody prohibits any kind of human innovation, they immediately become hypocritical. You know, there's no way to be consistent in saying I'm against technology, you know. It's right. like people, so I'm a big fan of e-readers. I feel like we should just all just evolve.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And people are like, "No, I like having a paper book." And it's like, "You know what I like? I like a scroll. I just like being able to roll that thing between my hand." You know, it's like, just evolve. You know, we've moved on past it. You know, it's not like we have too many daggum trees out there, you know, or whatever. It's just like, you don't need a paper book. I mean, it takes up space, it takes up resources. But besides that, that's just a peeve. Guys, enjoy your books. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I really don't. But I just don't understand why. We're tied to it, but if we are tied to it, let's just be honest and say, I just like it better, mm-hmm. and I'm just used to it, and I like it better,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, and that's fine. But if we were to say, well, and we just started watching, this is timely, I guess, maybe it's why I thought of this, we just started watching that show, Breaking Amish, I guess that, mm-hmm. it actually aired, what, like in the 2000s or
yeah,
something.
Sounds like an old show, yeah.
It's an older reality show about, you know, these Amish young people. I don't think they're officially, you know, some Amish sects have what's called Rumspringa, where they officially, it's almost like a rite of passage where they go out and they live among the English mm-hmm. To see what it's like, so that later they don't decide they missed out.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
In this case, and these kids are just like, I got to get out of here, and their family's very much against them leaving, but they do, and they go and live in the big city. I guess Learning Channel or whatever, you know, is happy to exploit these people's, you know, troubled, rebellious stage in life. But at any rate, so they go out and they're, you know, they're seeing the world and all that, and they talk about all the stuff that's prohibited that they're doing, that
technology
they wanted to do, right.
So, included, yeah.
Right. The Amish would be against, you know, certain Amish sects would be against operating a vehicle, mm-hmm. You know. But it's things like you can't have zippers, but you can have buttons, mm-hmm. you know.
Right, right. As if buttons are not technology.
Right, right. And it's almost always like at some point in the past for this group that the group will imprint on the way things are, and they will say, you know, future generations cannot be different from us.
Right.
So I use an oil lamp, you use an oil lamp. It doesn't matter. Centuries go on and, you know, we put a man on the moon or whatever, allegedly. And, you know, you know, all of the stuff. But at one point, an oil lamp was an innovation.
Right, sure. Right. At one point, the wheel was technology.
Right.
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 At one point, a hammer and
fire?
A
fire? Making fire?
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
do we just say, okay, well, if it was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me, and we just say if anything that was available in the ancient Near East was good enough for me, mm-hmm. right? So let's not use pipes to transport water. We can use aqueducts, but not pipes.
Right.
Okay. Let's not use asphalt for roads. We can only use cobblestones. Mm-hmm. You know. At what point do you draw the line? How can you be consistent?
Yeah.
When you begin to prohibit a specific thing, and this has to do, I think this applies to things like devices. It applies to any innovation. One thing that comes to mind is medical procedures and medications. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the things that I guess it troubles me. And so I would say that this is technology, right? Medicine. That we use technology to improve people's lives and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you think about Jehovah's Witnesses and their refusal to receive a blood transfusion, mm-hmm. you know, or Christian Scientists and their refusal of medications, mm-hmm. right, and stuff like
and
that.
And there's softer versions of that. There's a lot of Christians who are suspicious of the medical community and are looking for right. homeopathic instead of traditional medicine.
Right.
And maybe in some cases you sometimes talk to someone and you realize, oh, they really missed out on an opportunity because they developed this skepticism of mm-hmm. the medical community.
Right. Or maybe somebody has an a priori skepticism, like they're a skeptical person in uh-huh. general. Mm-hmm. And this is what I see maybe more times than not, is that that you have people who tend to be skeptical in general, and they apply that to their Christian faith. So, you know, they conveniently, let's say that somebody is concerned about the health benefits of the vaccines, that they've come to believe that that there is a cabal between the government and the and Big Pharma and stuff like that. And that this interest has engineered certain interventions to dupe the human race into, you know, mass population reduction, right? That we, you know, that we're concerned that this has been produced to shorten my lifespan or cause some, you know, because of overpopulation or whatever agenda they may have. And whether you believe that or not, and, you know, I mean, just transparently, I halfway believe in, you know, some of it, just because when people make decisions on the macro, they're not the same as the ones you and I make. You know, mm-hmm. you and I make decisions based on empathy, basic decency, basic morality. But if you're asking how will humankind survive for the next 50 years, you might make decisions that if they were known, you know, people mm-hmm. would be aghast at, and you would have to, at least to yourself, justify those decisions if you have that kind of power. And so I have a degree of skepticism over certain things. And I'm just trying to see what people do versus what they say. So I am a skeptical person about the human approach, especially to society and especially people with a lot of power. I really watch more closely what they do rather than what they say. Mm-hmm. And so all that to say is that, so I have some of that, but at the same time, I have to admit that my skepticism is not the result of my Christianity, and that being wary of those people is not my practicing of my faith. And I think that's critically important for people to say, because I can be wrong about those things, you know, and so it can't become an article of faith for me. If and this happened during the vaccines. Okay, so if I'm concerned about the health of the health risks of the COVID vaccine, mm-hmm. and my workplace says you have to take this or you're fired, and I say, well, I have a religious exemption. I think it's wrong.
You appeal immediately to religion as a convenient excuse,
right?
You're saying at that point they're identifying their skepticism as their Christianity, and really those are two right. separate things.
Right. And I just think it's so important. It's so important for someone to be honest with themselves when they do that kind of a thing. Because there's nothing wrong with losing your job or being destitute for Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know that. I mean, you know, at the same time, or maybe not for Jesus, just because you you were concerned about your health. But be honest, be honest and just say, I don't trust that this is going to be a healthy thing. And I don't think you should be allowed to make me just on a civil rights or, legal precedent. But if you resort to your faith as a convenient way, it really cheapens it, especially if when you have a headache, you take a Tylenol. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, because Tylenol can trash your liver. You know what I'm saying? That there are risks to every medication. Mm-hmm. Now, if you say, well, I just want to only have natural remedies and stuff like that, that's fine. Just admit that you're doing that for your health, or that you're worried. You're more concerned about side effects of medications than you are about their potential benefits. But when people make this religious stance on these things and they say, this is because of my faith, they invariably do something inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And it really does kind of put a black eye on the church. Mm-hmm. And on the faith. And to me, that's a cost that none of us should be ready to pay. Even, and that's why I say for Jesus, even at the expense of our own lives.
So would like a version of that be like, for going back to technology, social media? I know that you're still sort of on the topic of technology, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to bring us back. And I'm saying, so would a version of that argument be, some people will say, well, Christians shouldn't be on social media.
Right.
I'm not on social media and you shouldn't be either.
Right. Right, exactly. So that would be a prescriptive law, wouldn't it?
Uh-huh.
If you say, well, having a Facebook account's wrong, being on Instagram's wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Amish don't take photographs at all. Mm-hmm. At least the sect on the show doesn't. And so they mentioned that there's 13 Amish sects. So, we can't make blanket statements, but at least the ones on the show are against photography in general. Mm-hmm. Where do you draw the line? If you say, well, you can't have Instagram because you're being vain. Mm-hmm. Well, can you have a camera at all, right? Can you invite your friends to look through your photo album with you, right? It's just no way to be consistent with prescriptive laws. And when we're inconsistent, we really, we bring, I think, reproach on the gospel and on the faith. And there's just no way around it.
Okay. We're free.
We're free, and therefore all things are lawful for me, including Facebook, Snapchat, mm-hmm. Instagram, mm-hmm. Because
right. My phone, my computer,
right,
AI, all
right,
of it.
Right. But the prohibition of a thing, we've really got to be concerned about that. And I think if we decide not to use it, we really have to be very clear that this is our own decision for ourselves, and
right.
not. A prescriptive thing.
Right. It's not a black and white approach. And that's you said that's half of it. Mm-hmm. The other half of Paul's statement.
Right. And the other half is, he says, all things, and really maybe he has this pair of kind of contrast. He says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then he says, all things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything.
Yeah.
Right. And so that to me is just a beautiful statement, a beautiful gospel statement of freedom. Right. Because Paul's concept of freedom is that we have been set free to do what's beneficial, and that the person who's doing what's beneficial is acting in freedom. Mm-hmm. Okay. The reason all things are lawful for me is because I have been given the viewpoint to see what's beneficial. This is like with a child to an adult, right? And so children have a lot more restrictions. Mm-hmm. And so they have rules that they have to do. You can't have any pudding until you eat your meat, mm-hmm. right? How can you have any pudding until you eat your meat, right? the bell rang, okay? Now, these things make sense in this kind of closed system that's created by prescriptions, okay, and self-referential, which is fine because you're dealing with people who don't have abstract thought. They're in the concrete operations stage, and, there's do this or consequence, exact, and that's all there really needs to be for them, and it's really helpful if you can get them into a routine, as somebody who led a kids ministry, the beauty of kids is that they will do stuff because it's time to do the stuff. Once you teach them it's time to do the stuff, they just do it because that's the time to do the stuff, and yeah, it doesn't matter.
Clean
you know,
clean up, clean
right.
up.
Yeah. Right, that's the time. And if you create predictable patterns through a particular time span, then you're going to get almost 100% conformity with that, because it's just self-referential, right? And it doesn't have to make sense. Now, as somebody gets older, they are able to think through the consequences of their actions. Hopefully they will. In adolescence, you kind of have a malformed version of that, and so people make bad choices because they're letting go of the prescriptions, but they don't have the full resources to make that more enlightened decision. So that's unfortunate. But as adults, we can't live by these prescriptives, or we just honestly don't become adults. But spiritually speaking, and I would say that anybody who is not enlightened by the gospel is either a moral child or a moral adolescent. That only the gospel brings a human to moral maturity, adulthood. And we could have a whole conversation about that would go on and on.
Yeah, because I can imagine, boy, that a lot of arguments against that. Like, please, what are you trying to say? Like, the only good people are Christians.
Right.
But your point, let's just hit pause on that for just a second. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't chase that for a second. But your point is that only the gospel brings us to that place where we can evaluate whether something is helpful or not, and then have the freedom to do it if it's helpful, not do it if it's not helpful.
Right. And the reason I say that is because the gospel gives us, in the same moment, it gives us the ability to have an internal locus of control, right? And to also have an external locus of concern.
Locus of control.
Right.
External locus of concern.
Right. So my volition is intact and must be, right? And so... And remains so, but my concern is for the well-being of others, the glory of God, the greater good of renewing creation and all of that. So I have an enlightened concern that it's not just for me. So if I could take like maybe the best example of a very ethical atheist, now. So I read, I can't remember the name of it. I think it's something about atheists and being good. I can't remember. Good Without God.
Good Without God. Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. There was billboards and stuff.
Yeah, Epstein, Greg Epstein wrote this, Good Without God. And he's actually the chaplain at Harvard or somewhere, which is weird.
How
he's
ironic.
Atheist chaplain. And teaches ethics and things like that. But he's very candid about the fact that there are no ethics outside of what we agree upon as a species, yeah. That there just can't be.
Right.
And that's fine. I think maybe it's safer.
We made it up.
Yeah. Maybe it's safer. But the problem is that if we created it, it's contingent and we can undo it. And even on an individual level, it's not fully compelling to me. If the stakes are high enough, I'm going to be like, man, it's a construct.
Right.
And I'll just violate it.
Yeah.
So there's not, maturity really comes in the sense that it's not about me, or even us, that there's something bigger, something that will provide the necessary humility so that I can critique what I am just sure in my bones is the right thing to do. If I don't have that, then I'm still to some degree in an adolescent phase, because adolescents experience a lot of moral outrage, right? But they just... it's based on very black and white thinking, limited reasoning. They have not come to that place of personal brokenness where they can mistrust their own sense.
Yeah.
Right. But if a person comes to mistrust it so much, then they're back to being a moral infant and letting others prescribe. So that's what I'm saying, is that we have to have a greater basis for our choices, something that we would die for, something that's so much bigger than us, that it can compel us beyond ourselves. And at the same time, we have to have that personal volition and awareness And that's what adulthood is. And that's what I'm saying. So when it comes to technology, I think that everybody has to be allowed to make their own choice with regard to it. But that choice must be informed by what is helpful for me and for those immediately around me, for my greater society, in how I use the technology, and what is going to retain my freedom. And so I think that as we use our devices or don't use our devices, as we, you know, if you choose a flip phone, mm-hmm. you know, you choose some place on the spectrum, yeah. right? Yeah. I mean, you know, so if you think of technology, it's necessarily a timeline, but it's also a spectrum of function or, you know, impact or whatever.
Yeah.
And so everybody's got to pick, mm-hmm. right? Most right. of the time we all pick the cutting edge.
Yeah.
Right. Just gonna, but maybe we should ask, well, am I doing this because I really need this, or am I just conditioned that every 2 years I have to get a new phone?
Right. Yeah. Wendell Berry is a famous American author who's, I guess, sort of a Luddite, but he's always, you know, he's influencing a lot of people to think about like the harmful effects of technology, and let's live more simply and, but more thoughtfully, along these more thoughtful lines, mm-hmm. like let's ask whether it's really good for us and good for society, what these latest advancements are.
Right. Right. And, you know, those answers, I think, are going to be really complicated mm-hmm. Because let's just take that first couplet. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are beneficial. Okay. And again, this is just a statement of gospel freedom. Okay. There's a reason that people were under this guardian of the law until Christ came, right? Just can't have freedom unless we have this sense of what's beneficial. Mm-hmm. That's why Jesus says, if you, you know, if you continue in my teaching, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Mm-hmm. And I think by truth, it's capital T, truth being the nature of things, mm-hmm. you know? And so in the gospel, what we see is the nature of things, and therefore have the ability to ascertain what's beneficial.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That Christ has become for us wisdom from God. Mm-hmm. Right. And so now with this wisdom from God, let's think, what's beneficial, you know, what's a beneficial decision to make when it comes to technology?
Yeah. Does it help me love people? Does it help me connect? Does it help me to serve? Does it help me to get the gospel to the world? Mm-hmm. And those are vague, love and serve. That's very vague, but you should be able to ask yourself whether this is serving God's calling on your life mm-hmm. to love and serve.
Yeah.
Or whether it's hindering.
Right. You know? And there's trial and error. You know, I like that the author of Hebrews says that solid food is for the mature who by reason of use in the word of righteousness have their senses trained to discern good from evil. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe something looks like beneficial and we pursue it because it seems beneficial, but we, you know, we engage in that for a couple of weeks and we decide, you know, I think I was better before.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I really got sucked into this. And right. Now I thought I meant to use it for good, but it used me for evil.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, we thought we were going to do ministry and we end up in nasty, ugly arguments with people online or something, uh-huh. you know?
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, that wasn't good, mm-hmm. you know? And I think we have to ask, you know, about the sovereignty of God. You know, one major technological innovation in about the 6th century BC was crucifixion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you have been in favor of that technology if you were, you know, you were living at in 555 BC, and you say, you know, this whole crucifixion thing, man, it's really got people in line. This is great.
This is really the latest, greatest advancement.
Right, right. You know, and I think a decent moral person, which it's hard to say, you know, back in those days, what that would have been. Uh-huh. But a compassionate person, let's say, would just be like, you know, lamenting the existence of this technology.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, God writes, you know, in the scriptures that the cursed is everyone who's hanged on a tree. Mm-hmm. you get this story of Haman and this great reversal that happens, that somehow God is weaving all of this together.
Yeah.
And so
God incorporated technology in his plan.
Right.
And still does to this day. Obviously, God is using the internet to bring the gospel to people who are unreached.
Right.
Yeah.
So to wholesale say, I mean, it would be easy to say that 2007, when the iPhone debuted, was the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm. We see a lot of harm.
And right. There right. is a lot
society.
Of
society. Yeah. We see generations adversely affected.
Right. But I think it would be reckless and maybe even blasphemous some way to say that, you know, this was just a major win for the devil, or, you know, that God was somehow blindsided by this, or that this can't become a part of the plan for us.
Because, as if there's no gospel freedom to use it wisely.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you think about like Google Translate, you know, I mean, right now I can buy some earbuds and I can understand somebody speaking in a language I've never learned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah, truly amazing.
I mean, we're going to say that's a bad thing. I mean, really,
right.
We would only say that if we were of this mindset that the world is stronger than we are.
Right.
You know, that we are on the defense and the world is on the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a scary thing to think.
Mm-hmm. What we need is just to be mature. We need to walk out the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
We need to learn to discern the voice of the shepherd.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, did you say there's a couple pairs of statements Paul makes?
Right.
All things are lawful, but not all things are
beneficial.
Helpful.
Right. Helpful.
Right.
Right.
What's the next statement?
All Paul things makes? Are lawful, but I won't be dominated, overcome.
All things by are anything. Lawful, but I won't be dominated by anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 So, what does that say to us about any innovation?
I think that's what a lot of us are experiencing. I'm feeling dominated by my devices, by social media, by technology. I feel like it's running my life. I'm distracted. I can't read a book. I can't pay attention to the person sitting across from me. I can't get anything done.
Right.
And also I'm consuming all of this negativity and polarization and it's just adversely affecting me.
Right. You as a redeemed person, you with a, you know, with this freedom from Christ, you're free to do whatever's necessary to offset that, right?
Right.
You know, for me, it was just as simple as taking Facebook and TikTok off my phone, you know, because it's like, you know, if you find yourself just doom scrolling, you know, how much doom scrolling time is actually helpful?
Right.
You know. Probably none, you know, consuming the actual content that's out there on social media. And, you know, speaking of all of the, back to Kaczynski's concerns that, you know, we're being just kind of dragged along by technology. I mean, it's clear that these algorithms are created to do that.
Sure.
To grab and to keep you.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
becoming wise to that is a Christian thing to do.
Mm-hmm. But being afraid of it is a non-Christian thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, and so when I hear those things and I, you know, it's like, well, you know, these people who lead the social media companies, they won't even use it because they know what it's like. And that, you know, and people, whistleblowers, people who've left those companies and, you know, this is all designed to give you this endorphin rush and, you know, keep you trapped and all this. But the thing is that really only works on people who have an unmet psychological need.
That argument. Only
well,
works on people.
The approach, like it, yes, it will give me an endorphin rush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, I could become addicted to that endorphin rush, but yes, I can forego that because I have the resources in Christ to replace that, whatever that's done for me, whatever I think it's, however I think it's helping me, I can let it go and be fine.
Right.
There are others who don't have the resources to let it go and be fine. So, those who are in Christ, and I think we need to just affirm one another that, you know, those of us who are in Christ should have a degree of invulnerability to that approach. Like, yes, we can begin to be caught in it, but we can also get free. That we're not threatened by those attempts because those attempts assume a fleshliness, a neediness, a relative lack of power and strength against the pull that's engineered by those things. So, you know, for instance, TikTok, the algorithm is, it's this thing of beauty, right? That people are just like, you know, what even is it? I mean, I read an article that was like, you know, some point when AI takes over the algorithm entirely, people just won't be able to put their phone down. Now, if I were to agree with that, what does that say about what Christ has done in me?
Right, yeah. It's more powerful than the gospel.
Right. Right. And so I can't believe that, accept it. I can't use it as an excuse. And I can't let it direct my behavior that, well, I don't want to do this. I might never get free. And it's like, look, it's okay. You can get free. You know, obviously, certainly don't be foolish. But, you know, Paul tells the Ephesians, you know, that we should redeem the time, right? Mm-hmm. Because the days are evil. Mm-hmm. You know, that the times that we're in, right, that we have a call, we have a mission, we just don't have time to do something that doesn't refresh us. You know, like leisure is important, rest is important, it refreshes us, it makes us more effective later.
Yeah.
But there's a version of leisure that leaves us depleted.
Yeah.
And
I would say doomscrolling may in fact be one of those.
It appears to be, like, especially, who was it that wrote this book recently about the anxious generation?
Oh, Jonathan Haidt.
Yeah. I mean, there's, I think, an undeniable link between scrolling on social media and psychological unhealth, right? Mm-hmm. So it's apparently not refreshing us to scroll social media, that the content there is not enriching, encouraging. Even those things that which might affirm us, they don't simultaneously challenge us. Mm-hmm. And so we become more and more narrow in our view. And that's concerning as well. For me, that's maybe the greatest hazard of the internet, social media, is that we curate communities that agree with us.
Yeah.
And in doing so, we really develop a very bleak outlook on people who disagree with us, which is not the gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, the gospel is constantly trending toward greater cohesiveness with greater diversity. You know, and so if we want to ask, is it beneficial? Maybe we should ask, well, does your engagement with social media or with technology lead toward greater inclusion of other people, more unconditional love and acceptance of them? Does it build significant, supportive, and accountable community with people who are different in their viewpoint, their background from me? Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then yeah, I would say it's good. You know, it could be a good thing. If there were some way that we could use social media to produce that kind of real community. The problem with it is that there's always a degree of anonymity, I think, behind it. And so even if I have a profile up there, I can curate what goes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas in-person community, if we're together enough, I'm going to see, you know, at least some of your warts.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you'll see mine. Yeah. Right. And so then we can have those healthy confrontations, where we again grow into maturity and get outside of ourselves and realize it's a bigger picture. Without that, we can become very narrow. And sadly, I think a lot of religious people are particularly susceptible to this dynamic because we've come up thinking we're up against this enemy that's the entire world, right? And it's so powerful. It's so much bigger than we are. And we have to kind of huddle together in this little enclave so that we can be safe. And that's a very, you know, impoverished approach to the gospel. It's concerning for me. You know, I've known Christians who probably at least in part because of their engagement with social media, who have just become very paranoid And I just don't see that, you know, in the list of the fruit of the Spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, we ought to have a whimsy, a fearlessness, even in the most, you know, difficult times, that we have a sense that we've already won. And that we are the danger, you know. I was reading Solzhenitsyn's book, The Gulag Archipelago, and he tells a story, and it's really early on. The book's really bleak. I don't know if I recommend it, you know, because he's just telling him these horrific things that, and maybe he's just saying, here's how humans can become. Even, you know, with our best efforts, we can become, you know, horrible monsters. And
we
don't think it's just them.
Society here in Russia, and this is what we got.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, you know, don't think it's just us. You know, mm-hmm. it's you. Mm-hmm. It's all of us. And so, and I think that's a major folly that I've seen people fall into in social media and stuff, especially, you know, in the first Trump presidency, probably even, you know, more so now, although I don't hear as much about it, maybe because everyone's feels like they're in the minority and they're scared now or something. But, you know, there was a lot of just fear and vitriol and anger, you know, that was there, right? Because they were just afraid that society was coming to get them or something, you know, and that can become very, I think, dangerous because the people who are in the resistance, quote unquote, see themselves as entirely good. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember seeing this video of somebody just sucker punching this Nazi in the side of the head, you know, and everyone's just celebrating that. And I'm like, how is that a good thing? You know, have you actually helped mm-hmm. anybody? But that, you know, if I can say there's a basket of deplorables over there, then I've already dehumanized them. Mm-hmm. You know, and so if they present in a certain way, you know, they're white, they have a certain kind of tattoo, they have a certain kind of haircut, they wear a certain kind of clothing or mm-hmm. speak a certain way, they aren't human in the way I'm human. And now I have license to do them, you know, incredible harm. Mm-hmm. And now I can, but the problem is I can expand that category indefinitely. You know, I can keep creating criteria that makes someone included in that category, like they did in Russia, right? Because, you know, Stalin would be like, okay, you know, if you speak against the state, you're in this category, right? If you don't denounce someone who speaks against the state, yep. you're in this category, you know? If you don't punish or persecute somebody who speaks against the state, you're in this category. If you don't inform on somebody who speaks against the state, you're in this category, you know? And so you, this category begins to spread and get bigger and bigger, and the treatment of the people, because they're in the category, it can always be very inhumane because they're not human, at least in our minds, right? He talks about how to overcome these interrogators, right? And he's like, what do you need to make you stronger than the interrogator, than the whole trap? The moment you go to prison, you must put your cozy past firmly behind you. And let me see, there's nothing to be done about. And he says, I'm condemned to die, and a little later. But anyway, you know, he's saying just realize it's over, right? But only my spirit and my conscience remain precious and important to me, right? This is very much the Christian thing. And he tells a story about this older church woman who was arrested, right? And she had this approach. And so he speaks of this woman, and he says, at first the interrogators took turns, and then they went after her in groups. They shook their fists in the little old woman's face, and she replied, there is nothing you can do with me, even if you cut me into pieces. After all, you are afraid of your bosses, and you are afraid of each other, and you are even afraid of killing me. And because they would lose contact with the Underground Railroad, of her as an informant. She says, but I'm not afraid of anything. I would be glad to be judged by God right this minute.
That's freedom. That's gospel power. Freedom.
Right.
Yeah. That's a perfect place to end. We're mm-hmm. free because of the gospel to use technology, but right. we shouldn't use our freedom except to serve and love and do God's will. So we have to be discerning. We
yep.
get to be discerning. God's given us the power to be discerning.
Yep.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. If you've got questions about that, if you'd like to continue the conversation, you can always email us to discussion@recoverfaith.org. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.